But what I've realized is it's more important to me to have shown up for this project that I committed to myself and to publish every week and to follow through on this project that I know has value and I know will help even one other person. If it's just one person, I will be glad that I was able to provide that for someone. You have to just remember that phrase, don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
Hey there. Welcome to Lessons in Creativity, where we'll explore the creative process across different disciplines and learn how to harness this natural part of our human experience. I'm Jenna Massey, your fellow student and host. In this episode, I spoke with Amanda Branson. Amanda started her career in management consulting and then moved to being a chief of staff at a startup. More recently, she's taken on her own marketing consulting and freelance work and started a podcast called Professional Life Crisis. Think of Amanda as a career big sister for 20-somethings navigating through early career years. Amanda and I have been on similar journeys of starting our podcasts around the same time, and it was wonderful to talk with her about her creative process of starting her podcast and what she's learned from it as a project. Hope you enjoy our conversation. Awesome. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for being here. Really excited to talk to you today. We've been on a similar journey of starting our podcasts together and entering this freelance consulting world. So it's been lovely to have you as a partner through it. And I'm excited to have you here today.
Our little podcast babies are the same age.
That's true. They are. Yeah.
They're growing up together.
Yeah. They're friends.
I am thrilled to be on your podcast as well. And thank you so much for being such a great support system through this very uncertain time in our careers that has come with a lot of like excitement, but also a lot of like, oh shit, what am I doing? I've appreciated having you as a friend through all of it.
Likewise. I really have too. Awesome. So I want to dive in. We're going to talk about a lot of things relating to starting the podcast and what that whole personal project has been. But before we get there, I would love to start by taking you back to your childhood and thinking about Amanda, age 7, 8, 9. In what ways did creativity come out at that age?
Well, first of all, I'm so glad that you asked about starting at age 7, because I don't know if this is normal, but like, I do not have any childhood memories, or like, I have a very select few childhood memories from when I was like 3, 4, 5. Like, I don't remember as much as I feel like a lot of my friends do. So very relieved. I can definitely talk about starting with like around age 7. I feel like around then is when my interest in music started. And I don't know about you, but that's like around when you're starting to pick an instrument and you're learning about like what options there are to continue with music in your education throughout your, you know, grade school. And so for me, I started playing the flute and I had also been singing in chorus for some time already. So music was really always my outlet. I loved to perform in a group. Like, I loved the camaraderie of being in band, and I loved like being able to just be in a room with like that resonance from singing with other people. Mm. Obviously, this wasn't until like later in high school that we actually sounded good, but that like always was my creative outlet from the time that I was a kid. I was like huge, just music nerd, like all in on band and chorus. I was like the drum major in marching band, wore a silly little outfit, and was like really, really involved in that. And the other thing when I think back to being a kid was I always loved video editing. This is something that I didn't think about until I started the podcast. And I remembered that anytime there was a class project that was like, make a video or like tell a story about or like film a scene or whatever, I was always the one who like volunteered to do the, you know, the GarageBand edit.
Wow.
Maybe partly because that was like, I was like an overachiever and I was like, I'll do it. I want it to be perfect.
Yeah.
But I also found it really fun. And so it's been nice now having my own podcast, Professional Life Crisis. I am thinking back to when I was a kid. I like love editing the music for my podcast. Mm. I love like pulling together the video. Sometimes I love it more than others. But yeah, I've like always had that in me.
Wow. That's so funny. That's so interesting about the video editing too.
Yeah.
And the music is a whole other thing we have in common. Yeah. We really do have a lot in common. So funny.
Seriously. Soul sisters, for sure.
I love it. What about like early on, any like entrepreneurial instincts?
You know, I kind of hate those people that are like, I was an entrepreneur since I was a kid. I always had a lemonade stand, whatever. I'm like, shut up. Also, the people who sold like lollipops and stuff in school, I wasn't that kid. So if there's anything you take away from this podcast, just know it's never too late to become an entrepreneur.
Yeah,
when I was, I think I was about 10, so I was in fifth grade, my dad started a business. Mm. And that was like really my main exposure to entrepreneurship. Although I think he struggled a lot. He's like very old school. I think there were a lot of like just efficiencies and ways to scale that he wasn't aware of and wasn't able to implement in his business. So I can't say that I ever like really saw that version of entrepreneurship that's like, all right, you like put in this hard work and then you turn into this crazy success. Like that wasn't it. It was more like a humble like family business, something that my dad was passionate about that he started a product for. So I had seen that example in my life, mm-hmm. but I don't think it was until like later on, probably in like late middle school and high school, when I started becoming interested in entrepreneurship. And I was not humble. Like it was about money. I thought, oh, well, if I want to have this great life, if I want to be able to buy a yacht and take my parents away and retire them and all this stuff, like I have to have my own business. So I can't say it was for like this very genuine reason that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. It was really like financially driven. But now like being on the journey of actually being an entrepreneur, I've learned that there's so many more things about it that are really amazing and really important to me. Mm. Just like being able to be the own creative director for your projects and to just be the captain of your own ship. Like I truly do love entrepreneurship now, but I don't have that very romantic story from childhood of like being a lifelong entrepreneur.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And it is helpful, I think, to share that because I think some people might think, oh, you know, I didn't always have this instinct but sometimes it hits later.
It can be learned. Yeah.
Right. Sometimes it hits later and it can be learned. But it is interesting, too, that you like had the experience of learning or seeing like your dad go through it and mm-hmm. maybe like a different type of.
Super different than like a personal brand based business or even like consulting work. It was very different from that. It was like a physical product for your fence to hang plants on. So very like, you know, product focused. So yeah, that was like my first exposure. But then I like sort of branched out and found my own way.
Yeah. No, I love that. Well, I can't wait to go a little bit more in detail on that. Before we go there, so you pursued a career in consulting and then as a chief of staff focused on go to market.
Yeah.
Similar to some other people we know.
Sounds familiar, right?
So I'm curious, like in your career, you know, in those first years, how did you see like creativity and those entrepreneurial instincts come into play within your career?
I think if I go back about my background a little bit and how I wound up in consulting.
Yeah.
I was a music major at Carnegie Mellon. I started as a vocal performance major and I quickly realized that I was not cut from that mold to be a lifelong musician and to make a career off of it and make money. So I knew that I needed to find another path where I could explore other interests. I think the advantage that I had is that I was like both very left-brained and right-brained. I could be creative. I could see things from the music and the very like esoteric kind of world. But then I could also like put structure and I could make things make sense. Mm. And like academically, I think that that really helped me. Although definitely some parts of CMU was very difficult to get through all of the like more right brain stuff. But I think that kind of led me into choosing my degree, which eventually was a tie between vocal performance and decision science. And decision science was all about learning about human behavior and why people make the decisions that they do. And falling into consulting was like, I won't call it an accident, but it was kind of just like the prescribed path. It was what decision science majors from Carnegie Mellon wound up doing. And it was, you know, a decently paying job, a good place to start your career, you know. And I think at that point, I kind of struggled. Like, I didn't see it as being all that creative. I was on these like very technology implementation oriented projects. Like, there wasn't that much room for that creativity to blossom. So I think that's probably one of the really big reasons that I couldn't find enough joy in that career field. So yeah, it wasn't very creative and it also like wasn't particularly hands-on for me. And I think creative people probably struggle with that if it's like if you're very detached in your day-to-day from like actually like quote unquote working with your hands, like really being involved in the end product. Mm-hmm. For me, it was a very empty feeling career. And so eventually I knew like if I wanted to get any closer to my goal of eventually becoming an entrepreneur, I had to go and do something entrepreneurial. And I held myself to this ridiculous standard at Accenture that I was going to leave Accenture when I had my own business. And I was like, well, when, like, in hindsight, when the heck would I have had time or the mental space to actually, like, come up with something and get into a business and become successful? Like, more credit to the people who do. So that's how I wound up in the startup world. I eventually realized that there's not just one path, and it's not just you start a new business out of nowhere. It's not like, you know, you just have to start from scratch. I could learn from a company about how to build a business from the ground up and what challenges entrepreneurs face. So that was amazing for me. And that's where I was able to be a lot more creative in my job. I was able to do, like, exciting marketing campaigns. I was able to work with influencers on promoting a product and thinking, like, about what kind of messaging would resonate with people. I was able to work on visuals. Like, I'm a huge Canva fan. I have been working on, like, all my marketing materials in Canva, and I have for my past startup job as well. And then I kind of realized that I really do enjoy doing a lot of that creative stuff. It wasn't until I kind of came back to that, like, it's not every day that you're making a really beautiful looking creative PowerPoint and consulting. They're normally pretty cut and dry. So I think I've had to actually take actions and do things in order to get back in touch with that creativity that I had when I was a kid, because that very corporate consulting job kind of, like, stripped that away. And I didn't really find that much opportunity to be creative back in consulting, which was a shame.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting. Everything that you shared, especially, I think, even going back to the fact that you graduated as a music major and that balance that you described between your left and right brain, like, something I've observed in myself and even in the corporate setting is that they can often be in conflict, right? And it's like working in settings, you know, I've worked in settings within consulting where certain teams are on the more creative side of things, certain teams are more on the practical, and they're really in conflict and butting heads with one another.
Right. Like, creative versus analytics versus strategy, those can all be, like, very different types of people as well.
Yeah. And it's like, you can also feel that tension, like, within yourself of like, oh, I'm either this or I'm either that, or you're in certain lanes. But I think the more that you can tap into bringing the creative into what you're doing, or bringing the practical into the creative, kind of makes this nice marriage.
Yeah. And I'm trying to do more of that now with my podcast. I'm trying to take, like, both a creative and an analytical view on it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to have fun with it, and I'm trying to bring my whole personality, and I'm trying to make interesting and fun visuals. Yet I'm also looking to retrospect really analytically about what's working well and what resonates with people and what platforms to post on and what day and times, you know, all of those things. Like, if you can bridge the gap between the creative and the analytical, I think is, like, where we'll find success.
So I'd love to dive into the podcast, because I think you were just starting to share how that's been a nice expression of your entrepreneurial and coming back to your creative instincts as a kid. I think it's so interesting, like, so many of us are on a certain path, and it can be so challenging to take a time out or take yourself out off of that and have the courage to start something like a project, a personal project.
Oh, it's freaking scary.
It's really scary. So I'd love to hear, like, how did you have the idea and how did it first get started?
I think I've always in some way been and wanted to be a mentor to other young professional women specifically. I found that that was some of the most fun stuff that I got to do at Accenture. I was heading up the, like, local New York chapter of the women's network. And that gave me the opportunity to actually have, like, real one-on-one personal relationships with mentees and to sort of have an effect on the larger network. And so for me, I've always had that in the back of my head that I wanted to be this, like, mentor figure. And for me, like, when I was going through, you know, ending college and starting my first career, I didn't have an older sibling to help guide me through it. Mm-hmm. And most of my friends are actually the oldest sibling in their families. So I was kind of lacking that, like, older sister figure in terms of figuring out, like, what the heck the corporate landscape is and, like, what it means to start a job and to try to get something out of it, even though you hate it. Like, I just didn't have that person to guide me. And also, like, Instagram, like, it wasn't as big about, like, corporate girlies. Like, there wasn't as much corporate advice. TikTok was not a thing. LOL, like, aging myself. But there just wasn't as much of that out there. And so I just knew that I wanted to be that person for someone.
Mm.
I didn't necessarily know what, like, avenue it would take. I tried making, like, some TikTok videos for a while. I realized that wasn't my, like, favorite channel. It didn't really, like, feel good for me. And I thought long form might also be more impactful way to tell people's career stories and to help other people. Mm-hmm. So that's when I decided to switch and start the podcast.
I love that. Wow. And it's also, you also said earlier too, that like you kind of, in when you were working in consulting, you didn't have the mental space Mm-mm. to actually do it. What was like, did you have the idea for a while? And then eventually, like, why was the time that you actually started it the moment?
I got laid off. So I had been working for a startup as the chief of staff for about a year and a half. And I'd had the idea probably maybe only like 6 months into that job. So it was like a year that I was like marinating on it, trying to figure out exactly how it was going to come to life. And so when I got laid off, it was almost like someone just like ripped the Band-Aid off. It was go time, because I finally had that opportunity. I had the time and the space to launch it. And so I took action pretty quickly, actually, after I got laid off. I think I had a call with like a podcast advisor who I know we both wound up mm-hmm, working with and mm-hmm. really enjoying, like maybe 3 weeks after I got laid off, maybe 2.5 weeks. Because at that point, I knew, okay, this is the time. Someone up there has given me this opportunity now, and I need to do it because it's on my heart and it's something that I know that I want to do. And now the gift of time has just arrived.
So you already had the idea, and then you're like, okay, now's the moment.
It's go time.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, I love that. Well, and I was so impressed by just how much you jumped in, because it's really scary to actually start sharing that and putting yourself out there.
Definitely.
What were those feelings like, and how did you kind of work through some of that, like those barriers initially?
You know, I have to say, I think that getting laid off was like the I'm standing at the edge of the cliff and have all these ideas in my head moment. Mm-hmm. And poof, someone just pushes you off. So I think it was helpful that I had a lot of ideas about what I wanted to do before I got laid off.
Yeah.
And it was just that sort of unexpected and, you know, it's never a great time to get laid off, but sort of untimely push that finally brought this project to life. And so I think what you see from the outside is that I got moving on it really quick and that I turned it around really fast. And while some of that is true, like I knew I wanted to take action, it was a long time coming. So whenever you see those people out there where you think they've been some overnight success, or that, you know, they've just like started something out of thin air, it's oftentimes not the case. It's a long time that they've been planning or thinking or prodding on it, and they finally like get the courage to go out and do it. So that's kind of what happened to me. And I'm also just so grateful for your support throughout it. It's much easier to go through it with friends and people who are also starting their own thing. And it's been really nice to have like a little cohort of women that are just in sort of similar phase of their careers, who are exploring new projects. And that also helps, so that when I'm posting on LinkedIn and I'm like sharing this with my entire network of everybody professional that I've ever known, it feels a little bit less scary and a little less awkward, because there are some other people that are like in that same boat supporting me. But really, like the layoff, just it ripped the Band-Aid off all of those like fears and like preconceived notions that I had about a lot of things. And I'm grateful for that, because it made me kind of fearless in a way, and like a little DeLulu. Just post on, you know, Instagram. I have like 150 followers, not even, but who cares? Just do it. And like, if you post something on LinkedIn and it doesn't go well, okay, post something else next week. I've just shed that embarrassment and fear mentality, because like, truly, what do I have to lose?
Yeah. And I've really appreciated your support as well, because I think your attitude and approach to it is awesome. You know, I really resonate with what you said of a lot of times these things that people start have been building for a long time, right? And it might look like they're just starting something out of nowhere, but really it's something that's like come from deep within, and it's finally that they're getting the courage to actually do it.
Right. Think about how many projects never get off the ground. Mm-hmm. All these ideas that people have probably had that they have in the notes app on their iPhone that never go anywhere. Like, those are all the things you're not seeing behind the scenes when you see that one successful project go live and you're like, oh my God, how did they do that? Or how did they launch that overnight?
Yeah.
Bet you it wasn't overnight.
Yeah. Well, and then I think the other thing that you brought up too is like the importance of community and a support system, because when you're starting something new, like you're again putting yourself out there, it's very vulnerable, and mm-hmm. having like even one other person to like your post or to support what you're doing, is
to share it, to comment on it, you know, like it helps.
It really does. And I think anything that's so humbling with any creative process is it really teaches you a lot about perfectionism.
Right. Chuck it out the window. Throw it out.
Yeah. Like, talk to me a little bit about that. Like, how has your evolution been with that?
You know, it's hard. I haven't figured it all out yet. I am a perfectionist at heart, and I'm not going to pretend that I wasn't up until like midnight last night editing my podcast episode so that it would be quote unquote perfect. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's still mistakes. Mm-hmm. But what I've realized is it's more important to me to have shown up for this project that I committed to myself.
Yeah.
And to publish every week and to follow through on this project that I know has value and I know will help even one other person. If it's just one person,
yeah,
I will be glad that I was able to provide that for someone. But I think you have to just remember that phrase, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Because perfect might sometimes mean that your episode doesn't go out, it goes out 3 weeks late, or you never even launch that project that you've been thinking of doing. And I think you also have to remember that you are not the center of the universe. So the scrutiny with which you look at your own projects or your own LinkedIn posts or your own podcast episode editing is not the way that other people look at it. They don't care about you as much as you care about you. So they're not scrutinizing everything with a fine-tooth comb as much as you do. I think that's actually something really valuable that I took away from being a musician and having to show up on stage with great stage presence, even after you fumble a verse or you pronounce something wrong or you forget the lyrics. It's about moving forward and it's about showing your audience like how to receive you and how to treat you. And so I think that showing up every week and committing to the thing that you said that you were going to do is more important than having one perfect performance once every 5 years, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. And also, I mean, essentially what you're saying, like that commitment piece, I really resonate with. And it's really the equivalent of building a practice, something that you're building into your routine and something that you're deciding to do every day or every week or whatever, every month. But I think there's so much power in that. And it's also like, it can be hard to keep commitments to yourself.
It is. It is. I think you need to be in touch with your why. It's like so freaking cliche to say that, but I know the reason that I'm doing this. I know how I felt when I was starting my career. I had some of the darkest times of my life, truly. And honestly, I'm very grateful that like starting my corporate job was one of the worst times of my life. Like, I'll just put that out there. I'm very, very grateful and have had a very privileged life. But I know how difficult that part of my life was and how much I wish I just would have had that person and that guidance and that support and that like love and for someone to just tell you, it's going to be fine and I'll help you figure it out. And so that's my why. If I want to deliver on that mission, I have to keep going and I have to learn and adapt and change and try to get the message out to more people. So that's why I continue to do it. And that's why I've been able to hold the promise to myself.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think especially like there's kind of this excitement that comes when you start the project, but then,
oh yeah,
and we've talked about this, but you know, a couple of months in, you start to see a little less momentum. And that's when I think that like being clear on your why is so important to keep going.
And I think about those charts, I'm going to fumble this, but you know, there's those charts about starting a new project where it's like, okay, beginning is like a high, woohoo, everything's so exciting. And then you go through like a series of like ups and downs, then you hit like a low where, you know, you're not getting traction. The idea that you thought isn't as, you know, working as well in the market as you thought it would. You get tired. You're just like exhausted from repeating the same thing and not seeing results. And that like low point is where a lot of people quit. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to push through that point. And who knows if I've even gotten there yet, but trying to push through that to say to myself, my mission is more important than like the fatigue that I feel about this project. So that gives me the momentum to sort of continue on. And I've also started exploring offloading the parts of the project that like aren't the most enriching to me.
Right.
I think a lot of reason that people stop podcasting is because they don't want to edit. It takes a long time.
It does.
You know, like
yeah.
it really is like a soul kind of project. Like you want it to be your baby. You want it to be perfect. But so like offloading some of those tasks or maybe like having a VA to help you with like social media, this is something that I'm thinking about because mm-hmm. those are the things that get fatiguing. Yet I know it's what's important to keep the project going, but I never get tired of interviewing people and having those conversations. And so I know that, if I can continue with the interviews and still get something out of it, then I can probably outsource some of the tasks that I don't find as personally fulfilling.
Yeah, that's really smart. That's really smart. I also think it's interesting, too, that you're doing it without like attachment to any outcome. Like, I think that's also just something that's so interesting about.
Well, I'm glad it looks like that from the outside. I think it's hard to like go out there with a plan. And my plan is hopefully to monetize the podcast and to be able to make it more of a sustaining part of my career. Mm-hmm. But I am not too attached to that. Like, I want it to work, but more than anything, I want to be that professional mentor to someone. So yeah, it's not that there's not an end goal or a vision, but it's like operating in spite of that, even if you don't get to that.
No, I think that's an important mentality of like, even if this just helps one person, which I'm sure it already has helped many more than one.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your show?
Yeah, of course. My show is called Professional Life Crisis. It's a little double entendre, the name. I've never actually spoken about this on my podcast. That's so funny. But the professional life crisis, where like you don't know what you're doing in your job and your career. Mm-hmm. And then the professional life crisis, where it's like you've had so many life crises that you're now a professional at it.
I love that.
So it's like a cross, you know, between work and like life topics.
Yeah.
A topic that I'm probably going to talk about coming up on my podcast with a guest is not necessarily professional, but it's kind of tangential. And it's about freezing her eggs and turning 30.
Mm, yeah.
And I think that has a big effect on our professional lives and like how we see ourselves. Absolutely. In the shape of our future career.
Yeah.
So that's really like kind of what it means. And my goal with it is to help people who are in their early 20s and they're starting their first career out of college or maybe their second one. But they kind of know it's not their forever thing, and helping them to figure out, what can I get from this experience? What have other people gained from being in their first job that like maybe you're not seeing the value of? And then also like different options for pivoting to something else. I started a series on the podcast called What the Fuck Is Blank, Insert Blank Career. Mm-hmm. And that was just to help educate people about what different careers are that are kind of convoluted. And maybe people don't actually know what someone does, like in a sales career or in consulting. So it's been a really fun project for me. It's been a great way for me to also just self-reflect about my own journey.
Yeah.
And put a name to some of the things that I experienced that I didn't necessarily know how to call them. So for me, it's been really like habitually like, I don't know, like a good cleanse.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that it helps other people through that early stage of their career when there's just so much uncertainty.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Like, it is such a great resource to have for someone that's, you know, coming right into the workforce and wanting to demystify what some of these roles are, what these transitions look like. What have been some of the themes that have come up from the guests that you've had on?
Oh, some of the learnings that I've really loved are around not taking feedback too personally.
Mm.
When you're young and it feels like everything is a criticism of you as a person, whereas detaching that from your work is way healthier. Another thing that I wish I would have heard back when I was like very stuck in my consulting career and I was refusing to leave for anything other than starting my own business was that it's okay to have a stepping stone position, something that helps you bridge the gap to where you want to go.
Yeah.
I was very like pigheaded and thinking that I could just start my own business right out of Accenture. And maybe I could have, but it probably would have taken me a hell of a longer time to get there and to actually finally leave. So that one was like very healing for me personally.
Yeah.
And I think the other biggest like takeaway from asking people the question, passion or paycheck, is that this is not a binary decision that you make for your entire life.
Yeah.
That just like Taylor Swift, we all go through eras. And so you can be in a paycheck era where maybe you have a family and you need to bring in the money and pay for your kids to go to college and all that stuff. Or maybe there are times in your life where you're like dual income, no kids, and you can live a passion life. You can quit your job and go to Bali and travel for 6 months, and you can start a podcast on the road. And then you can come back and you can get another job if you want one. It's just not as linear, and you don't have to just be on like one side of the camp or the other. That life is like a lot more fluid than we think when we're young.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think it applies to so many things. But I think
totally
falling into that binary thinking of like either or with passion, paycheck, and framing it as like eras. That's so great.
Yeah, I'm in my passion era right now.
Me too. Me too.
It's a fancy name for like kind of broke, but loving it.
Yeah. But it's also like, it is freeing that it's like, I think for me, when I was entering this time, I was like, okay, but if I do this, then I won't be able to earn money in the future. But it's like the freedom of, oh my gosh, everything's temporary. Like you can.
Yeah. Oh, that's another great one. Everything is temporary.
Yeah. And the good things too are temporary. So, right? Like,
It's fleeting.
Yeah.
Can be fleeting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then you were starting to mention like some of the things that's gotten you to reflect on your own career too. Like what have been some of the learnings on your own career or like about yourself?
I think when I was in the midst of struggling in consulting, I couldn't really see the why. Hmm. Like, why was I still there? Why didn't I have the courage to leave? Why was I spinning the wheels on this career that I knew inherently that I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've realized now is I couldn't be in a position to help people with their career if I hadn't been through that corporate experience and if I hadn't had some of my own consulting horror stories.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't really be all that interesting of advice. So that's one big learning. The second one that comes to mind is that when you join a startup, everybody doesn't know what they're doing. It's not just you. And that like made me feel a lot better about the naivete that I came into the chief of staff role with. You know, you think coming out of consulting that you have all these like skills and like this clout or whatever. And then you get plopped into a startup. And the first time your boss asks you like, okay, well, like what's the ROAS of this initiative? And you're like, what is ROAS? And you're like, I don't know anything about like how to operate at a startup. Unless someone has been in startups for many years and solved many of the similar like types of challenges on similar types of products, they probably don't know the answer either. That's why so many startups fail. It's not like, you know, you're the only one on the ship who is learning things for the first time. So have a little grace. I think that helped me, like when I started talking with other startup leaders, realizing that I just wasn't alone in that boat of feeling like the learning curve was like so much bigger and so much faster than consulting. But it was also a really thrilling ride. And I'm glad that I went on that experience too. And now I have that as another like thing in my tool belt when I help other people and I kind of like mentor other people about how to leave consulting, how to be successful at a startup, how to get into the mindset of being an operator at a startup. So those are all things that I have like started to reflect on myself as a result of doing the podcast.
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting point. I definitely resonate with that one, and not knowing and joining a startup, it's very humbling. You think you're the only one, but then you realize everyone's making it up.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, so I'm curious, like, I feel like identity is so tied up with like our careers and what we do. And I'm curious, like how that theme comes up on your podcast. And then also for you, in this time period, like what it's been like to kind of let go of that identity for some time period.
Yes. Yes. Identity does play such a huge role in our careers and how we see ourselves both in the corporate world and like in society, which is like really bullshit. But some of the things that I have learned from interviewing guests on the podcast about work identity and some of my own reflections, it's really interesting. Some careers come with a sort of built-in mechanism for drinking the Kool-Aid. And if you think about it, when you were in consulting or I was in consulting, I would have probably said, I am a consultant. I not say, I am in consulting or I do consulting. It was like, this is who I am. And I think that there's a lot of, I don't know, harm, disillusionment, that can come with putting your entire identity behind the thing that you do for money.
Mm.
I think it's becoming more normal nowadays, especially with like Gen Z's mentality on social media about how like work is not as big of a part of their identity. They show up, they get a paycheck. I'm sure some of them do a good job and they're excited about it. But it's not like they view work the same way that I think our parents did or even that we do. That, you know, you've got to be doing this passion thing and like who you are is very tied with like the work that you do. So the identity piece was really difficult for me to let go of. I had to go on a sabbatical myself from Accenture in order to even think or entertain the idea of letting go of my consulting identity.
Mm.
that was a very big part of who I was, and not just who I was, but my value and my worthiness in society as being seen as someone who's like a high achiever and who's very smart. That was all very tied up in my work identity. And it took me a long time to detach from that, to be honest. I took that sabbatical. It took me 3 months just to get to the end of the sabbatical and at least make the decision that I wasn't going to go back to consulting. Hmm. But to be honest, it took me even longer than that to shed that identity. I think it stuck around for kind of a while. And now, again, I'm like reinventing myself with this sort of new era of podcasting and doing fractional and freelance work. And I also had to take time, like probably 4 or 5 months, to let go of that previous identity of being a chief of staff.
Yeah.
And the thing that I found the most challenging is listening to the voice that's in my own head and not so much absorbing what the opinions are of other people and what's sort of considered normal or what's considered like successful or the very clear linear path. And to realize that that voice that I've always heard in my head is valid and it's what I should listen to more than I listen to the ideas from other people. Because at the end of the day, you're the person that knows yourself the best.
Absolutely. Yeah, I resonate a lot with that. And I think that is something that's, it's so true. Like we do cling to these identities and it's hard not to. And it feels like when you're not in those, especially in the corporate world, like coming from the corporate world, when you're not in a identity that, you know, is associated with a consultant or a chief of staff, then what are you? Are you a professional?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back at Carnegie Mellon, we actually did kind of like an exercise with this. I was on the orientation staff because I was like, you know, a woo-woo, like very enthusiastic
shocker,
you know, person
shocker
on campus. Shocker there. And 1 year, we decided we were going to ask all of the new freshmen to stop introducing themselves with their major, but with something else more important about themselves. And that also threw people, because when you're like in college, you feel like your entire identity is your major and like maybe one or two of your extracurriculars. And so even back then, it was hard to detach from that and to stop saying like, oh, yeah, like I'm a computer science major. I'm a chemi. You know, that's like just not the most important or the most like impactful thing about you as a person.
Yeah.
But we're very trained to do that from the time that we're young, because society wants us to classify things. It's like easier to digest the information in the world if it's classified, right? And I think that they want us to do the same thing with ourselves as people. It's like just an easier way to understand people around you if there's this like classification system and you can like easily understand what box someone fits into.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Really interesting. Well, I guess I'll start to wrap up a little bit. I'm curious, before we wrap up, just what advice do you have for someone that's maybe thinking about starting a creative project?
Get in touch with your why, because otherwise it is very hard to keep going. And if the way that you first start it doesn't work, that doesn't mean that the entire project is not going to work. So this is something really valuable that I took away from my startup career. And I think before I was in startups, I kind of thought that a startup succeeded if it was a really good idea. And then I learned very quickly that that's not necessarily true, that startups have to go through so many iterations of their product or about how they talk about it or who they sell it to, what it does, features, all these things that actually play a role in whether or not that product becomes successful. So there's a lot of experimentation that goes on with trying to do things different ways to make like incremental changes that are going to improve the outcome for that product or for that company. And then I thought about my own project in the same way with starting this podcast. I said before, I started it as TikTok videos. I realized I'm not really that good at TikTok and I'm not going to compete with all these like Gen Zers who know exactly like what style and like what resonates on there. I just don't. But I still knew that my why was to help other young people in their corporate careers. So I ditched the TikTok and I said, okay, let's try long form. Let's try a podcast. And I've been experimenting with things since I started. The show has evolved a lot since the first episode. I realized that I liked interviewing guests more than I liked having solo episodes. I've changed the branding. I've tried video. I've tried short form video and promoting content on social media and LinkedIn. And so I think now I'm in that mindset where I'm just much more open to experimenting with different ways to make the project work rather than just saying it's a stagnant outcome. Oh, I tried this podcast and it just like didn't work. Well, how much did you really try? So I've like really benefited from having that mindset from my startup experience. And I would implore you to apply that level of thinking if you're trying to start a project and it just like doesn't click immediately. It doesn't mean that it's sunk and that it's not good.
Yeah, that's great advice. Just continue to try different things and get creative each week with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm, totally.
Yeah, I love it. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And thanks again for being such an incredible support system to me throughout this project.
You are so welcome. This time has flown by. It's been such a fun chat. And I'm excited for other people to benefit from thinking about how they can be more creative in their lives. I'm so happy that you brought this project to life. And I think it's really great what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Hope you enjoyed my episode with Amanda Branson. Check out Amanda's podcast, Professional Life Crisis, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever your favorite place to listen is. And to get a taste of her podcast, listen on to hear a little teaser. Thanks for listening.
This is Professional Life Crisis. I'm your host, Amanda. And by now, I'm a damn near professional at having a life crisis. Coming from the girl who bought a corporate-sized whiteboard, like legitimately the size they have on the wall in your office, to map out all her future career options, I know what an emotional roller coaster your early career can be. And I don't even like roller coasters. This podcast is here to help you get through those messy, uncertain times riddled with ramen noodles and self-doubt. If you're an ambitious, curious young professional trying to pave your way in the world, it's not as scary as I once thought it was. But I really wish I'd had someone to tell me that.